Let's do this thing.
Where's Gary?
He's here.
Oh.
Boosted my microphone volume. All right, here we go.
Hello, and welcome to the PC Gamer Podcast, episode 145 for August 22nd, 2008. This week, we've got a podcast platter packed with updates aplenty, including news that our industry is strong and rich, kind of like Bruce Wayne. Welcome to the jungle. Far Cry 2's map editor is Purdy. The human race plays 6 billion hours of Bejeweled. Flagship Studios founder provides post-mortem, as well as our continued reflections on Team Fortress 2 and first details on Grand Theft Auto 4 for PC. All this and much more on the other side of these steel drums.
Blonk, 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 blonk.
Oh, oops, wrong ones.
I'm your podcast host, Associate Editor Evan Lottie, and I'm joined live from Burkina Faso by Executive Editor Logan Decker.
Hello.
And via encoded satellite phone, it's Reviews Editor Daniel Stapleton.
Hi, everybody.
Via Morse code, esteemed podcast producer Andy Bauman.
Beep, 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 beep.
And finally, by telegram, we're joined by former PCG EIC Gary Witta.
Hello.
Stop.
Excellent. All right, how's Thursday treating everybody?
Very Thursday-like.
Yeah,
it's good. It's my first day back from New York on a vacation, so I'm not quite ready to start working. So I'd rather podcast instead.
All right. Yeah. Well, we will unfortunately be jumping right into it, Andy.
Let's do it.
So big news from our comrades at the PC Gamer Alliance this week, who made their first press release. For the first time since February, so that's fine, but it's good news at least. The Alliance's Horizon Report, they call it, it's going to be biannual from now on, says that our industry is bringing in serious money dollars to the tune of $10.7 billion in 2007, $2 billion of which was digital downloads. What's more interesting, retail sales were just 30% of this revenue. Should these numbers be reassuring for publishers on the fence about the PC as a profitable platform?
Yeah, it's great to see the PC Gaming Alliance actually do something. This is the first thing since they announced, "Hey, we exist," that they've actually done. And it is great news. Anybody saying that the PC gaming is dead and decides to leave it is leaving their chunk of $10.7 billion on the table, which. That doesn't sound very dead to me.
No, what are they going to... I don't know. It just seems like... So they do this release. Like, what? They have all the most powerful people in PC gaming, all presumably collected in one room. Now, what are you going to do, gentlemen, other than just sort of talk about press releases? It's very frustrating.
What would you like them to do, Logan?
You know what I would like them to do is get outfits and get out there... promote it as a platform, pick up the ball where Games for Windows has dropped it. Get some exclusive games going, get some AAA titles, get console titles moved over faster and better, Get people used to the idea that it is a platform,
Well, that's not really getting console titles moved over faster and better. That's not really the job of any body other than the publishers that are doing them.
Can be their job. Their job can be whatever they define it as.
But they can't go to a company and say do this or else what?
No, they can provide powerful incentives for any company to do things.
I don't know if they can or can't.
I don't know how many
resources they've got. What are they going to do? Are they going to pay somebody to put out a game faster?
Sure, why not?
With what money?
Well, then they should get money pooled up. Start a piggy bank. I don't know.
Right. Well,
just one release in 2 years is.
I don't know. If I was a developer and I was contributed to the PC Gaming Alliance, would I really want my contribution to go to another developer to get their game out faster? That seems kind of I wouldn't sign up for that. So these are businesses, they're doing what they think is best. So what's gonna do them was going to keep them in business, you know. So I don't think that's the job of the PC Gaming Alliance so much as to get the word out, like they are doing here, that the PC is alive and well as a gaming platform and actually making a ton of money. Mm-hmm. And you know, our complaints about NPD in the past have been like they don't keep track of online stuff. They don't keep track of more than a few retailers. They don't keep track of hardware sales and they do keep track of hardware sales for the consoles and factor that into all the money they make. So this is actually doing that. So it's at least putting us on level ground. Like when Microsoft says, "Oh, we made all these billions of dollars," and the PC only made a few million dollars on games, you know, well, we can say, well, you know, hey, 10 billion. I think that does help a lot.
I don't know why you guys are always talking about it in terms of the consoles, though. There was an interesting piece on Edge Online this week. I don't know if you saw this quote from the guy from NVIDIA saying that PCs and consoles are two entirely different ecosystems and neither one is a threat to the other. I thought that was quite interesting.
Well, I mean, it is kind of a threat they are kind of a threat to each other because, like, seeing AAA games go from PC to console lead, does hurt PC gaming in that there aren't as many games to incentivize people to get into it.
Yeah, I mean, even Fallout 3, for example, one of their lead designers, I think, came out last week and said that the Xbox 360 version is sort of their lead version. For whatever reason, so.
Oh God! Don't remind me. I'm going to have a tough choice to make when that comes out. I don't know which version I'm going to want to play.
I think that for a game that the action is primarily, you know, pretty much a shooter, why would you do anything but a mouse?
Mm-hmm. I don't know. I like my 61-inch TV and my couch.
it's reasonable.
Fair enough.
There's an interesting part of this article about the PC Gaming Alliance about how the audience for the PC gaming, like where they're taking over half their sales is from Asia, and a lot of the sales are probably from Europe. And it's saying the PC has a really big diverse audience, both geographically and demographically. So, I mean, I wonder if that scares publishers, if they don't know how to localize or make a game that will appeal to worldwide audiences or something. Maybe that's even could be a barrier to entry.
It's definitely valid, and that's actually something I'd like to see the PC Gaming Alliance address a little bit. That's something that the ESA has done in the past. They'll sort of gather some demo information, do some market research, and we'll come back and with a pretty nice little report, and everybody will be citing that report like for the rest of the year, like the AP and other news outlets. So it'd be nice if they could pull some resources together to do that. So also on the topic of profits, or rather negative profits, maybe, GamesIndustry.biz has some semi-controversial comments from id's Todd Hollinshead, who states that hardware manufacturers may view piracy as a hidden benefit for consumers. And what he's implying here is that because there are ways to get software for free via torrents or, you know, software copying, whatever, it may be an incentive for consumers, PC gamers, to buy hardware because they think, well, I can spend an extra $100 or $200 on my PC because, hey, I'm going to get free games potentially. Is there any truth to this, do we think? Do consumers sort of mentally ratchet down the cost of their PC if they know they can pirate software?
Well, I'm sure some of them do, but I mean, it's really the exact same argument that the recording industry uses against like iPods. It's like, well, the iPod makes it so easy to copy music that that people are buying these things saying we don't have to buy music. And they wanted to take like a, I think in Canada they do this. They take a chunk of every MP3 player sold. Same thing with blank like CDs. They take a chunk of every piece of blank media sold to make up for, like, it's a piracy tax because they just assume people are going to be using that to steal music. So they take a chunk of that.
I mean, what's he advocating? I mean, what does he want hardware manufacturers to do? Like, don't buy this PC. And if you do, well, you know, shame on you.
Maybe he's thinking that they should pay a piracy tax or something on high-end cards or something.
I mean, I think if you're, you know, if you are a producer and you think about piracy all day, you know, I think you kind of, your perspective gets a little warped, you know. I remember somebody from Nintendo was saying that he thought that, in his opinion, 90% of Nintendo DS users pirated games. I mean, the man is insane. 90%, right. You thought, like, bought an R4 cartridge. and we're pirating their games. I mean, the guy's obviously gone off the rails, and yet he's super high up at Nintendo. Right. You know, and I just think that it's just a weird sort of perspective.
What percentage of PC gamers pirate games, if you had to take a guess, do you think?
80.
Jeez. Wow, you think?
Did you say in the 80s?
Yeah. I'd say at least some form of piracy in any form. Yeah, probably.
You mean just games or everything?
No, anything. Games.
Okay, yeah.
I don't know. You say some form of piracy. What forms of piracy are we talking about?
Well, it's any game, maybe even Peggle or something they pirated, you know?
I mean, if it's that high, we're definitely talking about hardcore PC gamers, not just PC users.
I would think that anyone who plays PC games on their PC, that their number would be like in the fraction of a percent.
Wait, what?
Wait.
If we're talking about PC users.
Like anybody who plays games on their PCs of any kind, you know, not just like hardcore savvy Steam users, blah, blah, blah. Right. I would think it'd be like 0.005%.
I don't know.
I mean, let's talk about like people that would consider themselves PC gamers, like the people that read the magazine.
Like somebody who has Steam on their desktop, you know, maybe. Okay, then I would up the figure
PC game as a hobby.
To probably... 15%, maybe?
I think it's probably higher than that. I think it's also important to make a distinction between people that regularly pirate things or people that have pirated something in the past and, you know, thought better of it.
Yeah, maybe that's what I was thinking of that.
Right, because I think Andy's probably right. A lot of people have pirated something in the past and, you know, maybe, you know, just did it once when they were like a couple times when they were like broke.
And didn't inhale.
Right.
Exactly.
But you know, when we're talking about like the habitual pirates, people that never buy games and just think they're entitled to download every game that comes out, I think that it would probably be in the neighborhood of the 15 to 20% of people maybe globally that never buy games. Mm-hmm. And these are all, you know, totally made up numbers, everybody.
Sure, yeah. Absolutely. What about you, Gary? What do you think?
Well, I mean, certainly I would imagine that the statistics, the numbers are higher for PC gamers than any other kind of gamers, just because the platform facilitates it that much more. It doesn't make them, that doesn't mean that they're bad people anymore, you know, more so. I mean, they are bad people if they're pirating, but they're not more bad because more of them are doing it. They're just on a platform that makes it easier. It's tough. So if you're asking me, if the question is, you know, people who are kind of hobbyist PC gamers who... You know, the kind of people that would read the magazine and listen to the podcasts and, you know, aren't casuals and who habitually pirate PC games. I don't know. I'd love to think it was below 10%, but I don't know if it is. It's a tough one.
Yeah, that'd be great.
You're never going to get real numbers because, you know, who's going to own up to it?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, and, you know, well, if you go on a message board, a lot of people own up to it, but they won't, you know, say who it is.
Yes. But essentially what Mr. Holland said is saying is that hardware sort of need to take their fair share of the blame a little bit or maybe take some more responsibility. One of his direct quotes here, he's asked, do you think they, the hardware manufacturers, are secretly happy about it with being piracy? He says, yeah, I think they are. I think that if you went in and you could see what's going on in their minds, though they may have never say that stuff, and I'm not saying there's some conspiracy or something like that, he goes on to say... And I think that just based on their actions, what they say is one thing, but what they do is another. So maybe he's sort of looking for some kind of hardware integrated piracy protection or more of that. But
God,
yeah, that's troubling business.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think it's not really hardware manufacturers' responsibility. And you know, yeah, I think he's probably right. They do see that. They may probably see that as you know, another reason people buy their products. And it's not really their fault that that, you know, that people are using their products for something bad. You know, it's a lot like the lawsuit that Marvel filed against Cryptic over City of Heroes, where they were complaining that people were using the City of Heroes character editor to make Wolverine and saying that's infringing on the copyright. Well, you know, they could say the same thing about crayons, you know, but yeah, I mean, it's using a product that is not designed specifically to do something illegal does not make that product's responsibility. You know, it's
plus, you know, I would also add that a lot of the people who may be pirating games are also, you know, the hobbyists and the hardcore gamers are also possibly gamers who buy a lot of games. That they pirate a percentage of their games is entirely possible, but these are also great customers in a lot of ways. Just like people who, you know, trade mixtapes and share music online, you know, also buy, you know, massive numbers. They're huge iTunes customers.
How do they decide which games to buy and which ones to pirate?
Well, in the same way that, you know, when you listen to music online, you go, oh, what's this person listening to? You download a bunch of music. You're like, whoa, I love this. You go see that person's concert. You buy the next CD, that kind of thing.
Yeah. Does that really work in games?
I don't know, but there have been studies that show that a lot of people that pirate music have, you know, turned around and bought a lot of music. So,
yeah, I mean, I like to think in good faith. If you're a gamer, you're a hardcore gamer, you appreciate what certain companies are doing, and at least enough to support them, you know?
Mm-hmm. You know what? I remember back in the old shareware days, right? I was a total leech. I played the first, you know, the free levels of Commander Keen and Doom and all that, and I loved him. Did I buy very many games? No. But did I buy games? Absolutely. And that's money they wouldn't have gotten at all had they not put out those levels for free. You know, was I their best customer? Probably not. I didn't spend a lot of money. I didn't have a lot of money. But, you know, I got so hooked on all the free stuff they were giving me that I did end up buying all these games and becoming a hardcore gamer in the process.
It is the silver lining to the dark cloud of piracy.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah.
But, you know, it's not silver enough to justify it. Don't get us wrong.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely not. You know, and besides, I'm talking about the free ones that they released. But still, you know, I do think that they focus on the idea of every pirated game being a lost sale, and that's not true.
Right.
There's an interesting thought experiment you can think about. It's like all the great games that are coming out, again, near the end of this year, you're going to end up spending well over $300 to $400 if you buy all the, you know, the supposed AAA titles that are going to be released. And, like, you could buy a new video card, a really good one, for that much, and then, yeah. But that
does kind of pose the interesting question that if some kind of, you know, theoretically, not this would ever happen, but if some kind of technology came out tomorrow that finally and ultimately conclusively removed all piracy, it just became impossible to pirate games, mm-hmm. would that actually be a good thing or a bad thing for PC gaming?
Right.
Because maybe a lot of people would desert PC gaming and go do something else or play on, you know, find another system. Because it already happened,
you know, and they call it consoles.
Yeah, sorry, guys, what did you say?
Sorry.
Yeah. I'm just saying one of the fundamental appeal, if we're arguing that to some extent, even though it's illicit, one of the appeals of gaming on PC is that it's easier to get stuff illicitly. Maybe a lot of those people would jump ship if they could no longer do that. It's kind of a weird moral question.
Yeah, I mean, there has to be a way we can protect software but preserve the open nature of the platform. For the end user, for sure. Well, we'll continue to reflect on this. But also, as we're all aware, one developer that doesn't have to worry about piracy too much anymore is Flagship Studios, who closed up shop in July.
Oh, ouch.
That was like a lot colder than... Yeah,
that was poignant.
It was sort of a lot colder than you probably intended.
Stings yes. a little.
Evan Lottie called his ice.
But yes, I didn't mean it so spitefully, but there is a recent 8-page interview with founder of Flagship, Bill Roper, on 1UP, where he doles out, it's just basically opening his heart up about the company and what went down, like his hopes and dreams, some of which were crushed, unfortunately. But the details include that, for the time being, guess who owns the right to Hellgate, the IP, Comerica Bank, and the fact that it's unlikely that Mythos will continue development in the hands of somebody else. And also, he notes that they knew before they launched Hellgate London that the hybrid free and paid business model they had set up wasn't going to be successful, but it was too late to sort of put the brakes on the train.
Right. I guess they say in there that they saw, like, once they announced it, they saw this, all the negative feedback, and they're like, maybe this isn't a good idea, but nothing they could do.
Suck.
And, yeah, in retrospect, he talks a lot about, you know, how they should have gone one way or the other, either a single-player game and you know, limited free online play, or online-only subscription-based. I guess we probably could have told him that if he had asked us before.
Is that like the scene in the Titanic when they see the iceberg and they're like, oh.
Yeah.
Yeah, they, you know, turn. Yeah, not going to happen fast enough.
Right.
Yeah. All in all, though, it's just a very telling, really emotional interview. We recommend you guys take a look. Yeah.
And the thing he said about Mythos was, I guess, Hanbitsoft, their Korean publishing partners, they do own that IP now. Did I get that right?
That's accurate. He said that he saw it as unlikely that they're going to continue development of the property, at least from his perspective. Or maybe it's safer to say that there isn't any news on that exactly. Right. But
yeah, a lot of it he's saying, he's finding out a lot of this stuff by reading it online. So I guess he's kind of cut off from a lot of sources. But and also he was ripping on Hanbitsoft for breaking their NDAs and talking about the deals. Because apparently a lot of that information wasn't supposed to get out when it did. But he did say that his primary concern was getting as many debts paid off as possible and getting the team members at Flagship situated in other developers. He said that Hanbitsoft was looking and had interviewed some of their guys to maybe set up a U.S. studio and maybe continue work on Mythos. But yeah, that. Yeah, I guess he did call that unlikely.
Indeed. Well,
it's a very, very sad situation all around.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I think, I don't want to cite it incorrectly, but he mentioned like they had to liquidate like their 401ks in order to pay people and stuff like that. Just, yeah, we have a lot of respect for the effort they made to transfer their developers to other teams. And anyway, so other than all that saddening industry stuff and piracy, we've got some pretty interesting game-related updates coming out of Leipzig. One I want to highlight most was the video for Far Cry 2's map editor that came out yesterday. I was really impressed with it. I think the video that they showed might have been for the console version, the interface and whatnot. But it's so tailored for the end user. It's elegant. Like, it just has this very organic feel to it. It showed the video, you're sort of dragging this paintbrush to make giant mountains, and you're just dragging a river around and dropping in vegetation on a large scale. And then, but the cool thing about it, you can pop in and out of that third-person creation perspective immediately into a first-person perspective. They showed just plopping down this hang glider, as you're creating, and then dropping into first-person, jumping on the hang glider, going down in the forest, setting some grass on fire, and that's all without a load, and you're adjusting weather dynamically.
Got to see it to believe it. It's mm-hmm. really amazing.
Absolutely. But yeah, other than that, are there any specific announcements that are hitting you guys well out of Leipzig?
I was thrilled to hear about Fallout 3's release date on October 28th.
Yeah.
I've got my calendar marked.
Yeah, definitely.
So we should all dress up as characters from it for Halloween, right?
Well, I don't know if you can really dress up. Well, I mean, there are a whole bunch of different
outfits.
I'll
just burn myself.
Yeah, yeah. You could go as a ghoul.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Brotherhood of Steel. That'd be cool.
Yeah. You could get a lot of tinfoil and go nuts.
I love tinfoil.
Yeah. Logan, any good news coming out of you from Leipzig so far?
No.
Well, how about the fact that we got some first screenshots and details on Grand Theft Auto 4 for PC.
Yeah, so that is good news. I'll buy that.
They still didn't put out a whole lot of details. I mean, they said, okay, it's going to support 2560 by 1600, better textures. Multiplayer modes, they say, we're going to expand on it, which is what they said before. So
it does appear to be, based on what they've shown so far, it does appear to be the first GTA on the PC that doesn't look like ass.
Well, it's the first one. It's the first one that wasn't designed to run on the PS2.
Yeah. I mean, just you remember, like, even San Andreas, just as fun as it was, I loved it, but it looked horrible.
Well, I mean, I thought it actually looked good for what it was. Yeah. For a PS2 game, I thought it looked fantastic, actually. And the amount of detail.
That is true, yeah.
The amount of detail they got in there for a PS2 game was amazing.
I do love, for some reason, I love the idea of the montage clips.
Yes, I was just going to say, the best detail.
Like, it's always recording what you do, and you can instantly like say, okay, take the last 30 seconds of what I just did and turn it into a movie.
I wonder if you can like go back and reshoot it, though. Like, quote,
you mean, like,
air quotes.
Grid?
Like, oh, can you do that in Grid?
Well, I think the idea is when you pull off something that's sort of random, but really cool, like an unbelievable, like, you know, confluence of events or just the perfect explosion. You just then you can save it. You don't have to worry about recreating it and all that. And then you can make a montage of all these clips later. How that works exactly, I'm not sure.
It'd be awesome if you could like replay that section and then but like float the camera around and get different shots of it.
I'm sure you can. That's like the whole point of it, isn't it?
Yeah, that sounded like it, but I wasn't sure.
Not quite sure if it goes that far. I hope so.
But I'd be surprised if they added that feature and didn't have the ability to go and look at it from different angles. Have you played Grid, Andy?
No. Does it have that sort of feature?
It has. Yeah. It does that one better. It lets you go back like 30 seconds and actually replay. So like if you have a crash, you can rewind about 30 seconds and then avoid that crash.
Basically, all your cars have a flux capacitor built in, so it helps out.
But you can be going any speed, not just 88.
Very true. But yeah, otherwise, we saw a new cinematic trailer for Wrath of the Lich King. First screen.
Which looks amazing, by the way. And, this is something I don't really get about Blizzard. They take a lot of pride in their kind of cartoony, stylized art style. And then they put out these gorgeous cinematics that are in a very realistic, gritty sort of art style that looks practically nothing like the game. I don't really get why they have that disparity there. I get that they do it because it looks awesome, but it's kind of jarring. It's like you see it in the cinematic, and then you see it in the game, and it's two totally different art styles.
Yeah, I think it might be a matter of. It seems like they have a dedicated CG team.
They do, definitely.
Mm-hmm, so,
but that doesn't mean the CG team couldn't use the art style that was more similar to what's in game.
Of course.
But I mean, it's just kind of weird. I mean, guys, what do you think about that? You're the WoW expert.
I don't think that a cinematic necessarily has any need to reflect the style of the game. We've seen tons of different cinematics where the in-game graphics don't look exactly like the cinematics. I mean, it's a slightly different style, and I think that the cartoony style of the in-game graphics in WoW have been a big part of its appeal. I think it's partly why they've been able to draw so many casual gamers in and make them converts. Is that when you first see the game, it has a very kind of friendly look to it, and I think that's been a key part of the appeal. I think it would be a mistake for the cinematics to have that same cartoony look. So they've just come up with two different looks. I'm sure when they do the live action movie, that will have a different look to it as well. You know, each different iteration, I think, has its own unique look.
Well, why do you think it would be a mistake for the cinematics to look, more similar to the game? I mean, not
because I don't think you'd be able to have any of the same. That, for example, if you look at that Lich King cinematic that came out today, if you imagine that in a more cartoony style, I just don't think it would have the same drama. I don't think it would have the same impact.
Right, I agree with that. It would be less dramatic, but the game itself is less dramatic. You know, it's just kind of a disconnect there.
There's a lot more humor in the game than there is in this. You know, the cinematics do tend to take themselves very seriously. I think the cinematic guys at Blizzard, and the story guys, they take that stuff very, very seriously. I think it's kind of interesting that in the game itself, there's a lot more broad humor. I think it's an interesting mix, but it seems to work for them.
But you think that it's a better idea for them to have like the tone in the promotional trailers to be totally different from what it's like in the game?
Well, given the amount of success that they have, I think it would be foolish to second guess anything that they do.
That's true. You can't really argue with this.
And actually, on that topic, one company that's actually very consistent with how they frame their art design in-game and their cinematics is Valve. And on Tuesday, or was it Monday? I think it was Tuesday. We got introduced to the Heavy and his sandwich, one of his unlockables for the new Heavy update that hit on Tuesday. It was a pretty humorous video that released with that. They've sort of been doing the like Meet the Scout, Meet the Sniper, etc. video, and they had one called Meet the Sandwich, which was pretty silly. Have you been trying out the Heavy yet, Gary?
I jumped in after the update was made, as many people did, of course, and it was a bit frustrating. As it was with the last update, because of course everybody wants to play the new class, so it was nothing but heavies and snipers, because of course snipers love heavies. They're very, very easy to shoot and kill from a distance. And so there was a lot of people jumping in there, getting the unlockables. I've already seen quite a few Natashas and KGB gloves and sandwiches running around. You know, all the unlockables are already in play. Mm-hmm. As a pyro, I particularly enjoy the sandwich. It's an interesting unlockable for heavies. You know, this was really the big thing that Valve have done to try and, as they promised they would, make the heavies less dependent on having a medic buddy following them around all the time. So now what you can do is you pull out your sandwich, which replaces your shotgun, and if you can find a quiet spot for, I think, 4 seconds,
yes,
you can eat your sandwich and get something like 100 health back. But yeah, it, you know, there's you cannot, once you've decided to start eating your sandwich, you have to clean your plate. You've got to eat the whole thing. You can't decide to, you know, finish eating halfway through if something bad comes along. You know, you're stuck in that animation. And so
you can't even move?
No. It's a 4-second animation that has to play out and you cannot interrupt it. So as a pyro, I've found a few heavies sitting, you know, in a corner or inside a shed or something. They're low on health. They're eating their sandwich. And I let loose with my flamethrower. And I say to them, would you like that toasted?
Oh, yes. I was like,
oh, fantastic.
That's my new annoying catchphrase when I catch a heavy eating his sandwich.
I love it. I mean, for me, like, outside of the gameplay and the fact that it restores health and that's cool, like, I kind of see, like, in the context of games in general, it's a little subversive to me. Like, this sounds a little weird, but you think about all the arbitrary uses of food and, like, fighting games and, like, platformers and dungeon crawlers where you're, like, walking over whole turkeys to heal yourself and you just magically absorb it. Like, Valve sort of turns that on its head a little. Like, it builds in a legitimate mechanic for eating in a pretty competitive shooter, right? I just think it's brilliant. I mean, they don't feel compelled to give every character new guns and they're just building on this military theme. Like, it's just a really cool concept. I like it.
It's always baffled me, though, when people use things like food to restore health. It's like, it's such a disconnect from reality in that you're eating a sandwich and it's somehow healing bullet holes, and that's a hell of a sandwich.
It's a holdover from the classic days of video games.
Wolfenstein 3D. Oh, yeah.
You know, you pick up little roast chickens and things, and they would feed you. It's since evolved a little bit. You know, medical kits. You know, whatever first aid kits that heal you instantly. Yeah. I mean, it's no less absurd, really, when you think about it, I guess, but. I like that. I like the sandwich, you know, and the heavy is, you know, comes across as a guy who, you know, he's obviously got a hearty appetite. You imagine a good sandwich would be just what he needs.
I, for one, feel better after a sandwich.
Logan's so anti-bread, he's never eaten a sandwich in his life.
Well, I eat sandwich like materials. I eat the stuff inside a sandwich. Bread is gross.
You're not getting the full sandwich experience without the bread.
Bread,
Logan,
comes from the butt of a yak. And I don't eat yak ass.
I see.
But yeah, I mean, forgive me if I'm harping on this too much. I'm really drawn to the way Valve in Team Fortress 2 communicates, the way that the characters communicate, what they're doing, like, from afar, with their silhouettes, with the sounds their weapons make. Like, I know from, you know, I can't see a pyro. I know what, and I hear what he's doing. I hear a critical hit sound or, you know, a taunt or something. I know what's going on in the rooms around me. And it just kind of feeds into this idea that every action is easily communicated. Like, when I see a heavy eating, like, that's a unique animation not shared by any other character. The heavy doesn't have something else that does that. So I know what's going on. I can gather that information, tell my teammates what's going on. It's just a very streamlined and cool way of doing things, I think.
It's amazingly high production value that they put into these things. They don't cut corners anywhere.
Mm-hmm. All right, well, as much as our most played game this century may be Team Fortress 2, apparently that isn't so for humanity as a whole. PopCap Games have claimed that across browser-based, handheld, mobile, and other platforms, that our cumulative time playing Bejeweled as a race is greater than 6 billion hours, making it the most popular played game this century.
I gotta dispute that. I think Tetris probably wins that because I think that's a very impressive figure, but Tetris just predates any means of tracking how many hours it's been played, and there have been so many iterations of it over the past, 15, 20 years, that I think Tetris probably beats it.
I think, they didn't say, but I think when they say this century, they may be counting from 2000 onward.
Oh, yeah, good point.
But at the same time, just to get an idea of how much time 6 billion hours is, if 60 people were playing the game 24 hours a day, it would take them 11,400 years to equal that time, so that's pretty significant.
Yeah, that's a lot of wasted productivity.
I did my own little calculations here. That's 2.5 million days, and 7 million. Wait, no, it can't be 7 million days. 7 million years?
No.
So
all right, so yeah, that's typical of my math. Let's just move on.
I actually think this proves that Bejeweled, the jewels actually combining form the universe in the Big Bang. That's how we came to be, Bejeweled.
Ooh, singularity.
Totally.
No, it was 25 million days and 7 million years, I think.
Right.
Let's move on.
Yeah, and if you think about it productivity-wise, say 25 million people spent 24 hours of their lives playing Bejeweled, that's still not very much in the grand scheme of 6 billion people.
But what were we doing 7 million years ago, I wonder? Were we walking at that time?
I don't even think we were around.
Yeah. No.
No?
I don't think so. Well, I mean, modern humans only go back.
Did we have eyeballs back then?
I believe so, yes.
All right, I'm just checking.
But I think modern humans only go back about 100,000 years. Is that about right? Did I make that up? I may have made that up.
Well.
But we didn't have feathers or anything. I'm just saying.
Yeah.
All right.
What do you think your own personal most played game of all time is if you were able to add up all the hours?
Oh, jeez.
That's going to be tricky.
Tribes.
Really?
Straight up Tribes.
Really? I remember playing a lot of Tribes, but not for a very long time. It was a game that kind of came and went. When it was the game to play, it was a great game.
Right. Mm-hmm. We all know what Gaz's most time-consuming game is. That's a no-brainer.
Well, no, but hold on. Is it, though? I'm thinking I don't know what it is, really.
Could you really have possibly spent more time playing anything else than you've spent playing WoW?
Well, I mean, the thing about WoW is that's one of the few games that you can actually quantify. I can go in and type /played, and I know exactly how long I've played it for.
Right. But, I mean, just think about all the hours you've spent just sitting there playing WoW. How can anything possibly compare to that?
I don't know. I mean, historically, like you say, I played the hell out of Tetris. I played some of the StarCraft and Red Alert games, and I was at PC Gamer. I played those for hours. Every night we played the shit out of those games. So, I mean, I don't know. It's Warcraft would definitely be up there, but I don't know if it's a lot.
But I mean, Warcraft is that's a game that you start playing at 6 p.m. and then look up and realize that it's, quarter to 7 in the morning. So I don't know. I don't know if you ever played StarCraft or Red Alert like that. And even those were, you were spreading those out over those several games. So I accuse you, Gaz, of having spent the most time in WoW.
Dun, dun, dun. Well, I find it impossible to answer that question. This is I'm wondering if maybe it's Quake 3, just because I used to live in this building where we had a wired LAN and we just played for hours and hours and hours. Yeah. That's a tough one, though.
As a series, I've probably put the most time into the Winning 11. Soccer game series.
Very nice.
I think for me, it is tough for me because I've spent a lot of time in the Civ games, in XCOM, of course, and playing. I don't think there's any one RTS that I've played just nonstop that long enough that it would compete with those. It's probably one of those.
I forgot all the old black and white SimCities. Ooh.
Right. SimCities. Yeah,
I ground away for hours and hours and hours. And I would go to bed. I would get things how the way I wanted them, go to bed so I could accrue all this tax money.
you left it running nice.
Yeah. And then, go back at it in the morning with all this new dough to spend. And I'd be like, yeah, sometimes, yeah. Would it have burned to the ground? Occasionally. But, if you want to make an omelet.
You have to burn a city.
Exactly.
Yeah, just the idea of tornadoes coming through while you're sleeping is nice.
Yeah. I didn't do anything different than the Bush administration, so.
Oh, man, that reminds me. When I was in New York, this guy at Coney Island Freak Show, which is awesome. I recommend everybody go to that. He was like, it was a freak show exhibit, so he had, like, you know, weird hands. They were, like, lobster fingers. And his overtly, like, Bush hatred comments made people more uncomfortable than his freakiness.
Well, you know, I'd just like to say that Logan Decker does not care about sim people.
Wow. That is a gem. That is a gem.
Oh, my God, I'm going to get flamed.
So,
can I change my email address?
Anyway, on the note of games we are going to be investing some time in, at least Dan and I, being pretty keen on the strategy games, we went to look at Warhammer 40K Dawn of War 2 last week with Relic, and we got to see one single-player level demo, hands-off, that included the Tyranids that they just recently revealed at Leipzig yesterday, or the day before, I think. And I think it's pretty safe to say Dan and I are pretty excited about seeing... They're basically taking Company of Heroes cover system wholesale and transferring it into the Warhammer universe, updating the engine, obviously. We're pretty excited about that, Dan, right?
Yeah, absolutely. It's I did the cover story on it a few months back. It looks spectacular. I just love how incredibly coy those guys were about the Tyranids. Actually, when I was up there doing the cover story, I'd like to claim that I accurately predicted which of the other races would be in there at launch. They asked me which I'd like to see, and I said, well, I like the Eldar, and I've been hearing a lot about the Tyranids. I'd love to see them in there, and I guess they were listening. So, but yeah, the Tyranids, for everybody who doesn't know, they're basically the Zerg before there was the Zerg. Every time, like, somebody claims that Warhammer is ripping off the Blizzard, like a Warhammer fan's head explodes. Evan, you played Warhammer Tabletop, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, they're very much like a close combat, swarmy kind of race, but at the same time, they're not like totally mindless. They sort of operate like the Borg would in Star Trek. They have like a hive mind. They have like some psychic abilities. They have units that launch like spore mine grenades that we saw in the game that were pretty cool.
Right. They also had and going back to that hive mind thing, they have... units that like larger units that control the units around them, like smaller units. So if you kill the larger unit, it sends the smaller units into kind of a feral state where they'll, you know, berserker, where they'll attack anything, including each other. They had a lot of cool stuff they were showing off there, including like, at least for single player games, they're like line of sight mechanics. So you can approach enemies without them seeing you, which it doesn't actually work in the multiplayer. They said they tried it and it didn't really work. Mm-hmm. But the Tyranids are also playable in this, so only in multiplayer, though, because single player, they're just doing a Space Marines campaign.
Which we don't have a problem with, because hopefully they'll do an expansion with another race in the future.
Yeah, Relic is so expansion happy, it's bound to happen. Mm-hmm. But they say that the Tyranids will have all the same like upgrades and war gear that the Space Marines do.
So very cool. That game is definitely going in a good direction. For more information, I have a preview on GamesRadar.com right now, uploaded yesterday. So check that out if you're interested in reading more. Let's see. That's about all we got in terms of games. How about we take some questions?
Fantastic.
There's a guy who asked a question, and he didn't necessarily want his question played on the air, but he was talking about how, Evan, you mentioned briefly that you may have played EVE Online, and he wanted to hear if anybody played EVE Online and our thoughts about it. And I didn't know if anybody played it, because I don't play it.
There's at least a few hundred thousand people that still do. And the people that do, the thing is, like, they're extremely dedicated to it. I mean, it's been going on since, like, 2005, I think.
Have you played it, though?
Yeah, I put probably just a dozen hours into it, getting set up and whatnot. I don't know, just really what I'd highlight quickly is everybody's on the same server. They're in the same universe, basically, so you're interacting together. One of the cool things with grinding is you don't earn your abilities necessarily. You automatically train them through a menu. So you're basically setting up, okay, I want to learn engineering or how to improve my generator skill or my diplomacy skill, and you just set it to train that, and it tells you how long it'll take, and it does it while you're offline, while you're sleeping, whatever, so you don't have to go to all these missions and instances in order to do that. You just sort of set it up how you want. So that's kind of cool.
I think what's like scared me away from giving it a try is I just hear so much about the insane learning curve. It takes like a long time to get the hang of it and figure out what's going on. And I just really don't have the time to put into that.
No,
I'd rather be spending my time with games that I already know how to play or will learn how to play quickly.
It is relatively deep, but at the same time, like if you want something to invest in, it's worth recommending, especially if you have a group of friends to get into and do missions with. I haven't played it enough to really comment too much on it, but that's what I'd say.
It's fun to read about people's elaborate scams that they pull off.
In fact, Logan, aren't we doing a story on the government in there?
December 08 issue.
Yeah, there's a story about how it's got a fully functional elected government in there.
They're doing some amazing things. Yeah, they've hired a full-time economist to monitor the economy within EVE Online. It's incredible.
That sounds amazing.
It's like basically what – let's just skip Second Life altogether. It's basically one of the first fully functioning virtual nations.
Yeah. Where you can actually kill each other in Second Life. There's a point to it. So.
Indeed. There's actually I just got reminded, one of my friends told me that plays the game a while back. We all know somethingawful.com. They have a pretty huge clan on EVE Online, and they do their own propaganda videos. If you go into YouTube and search Little Bees, there's these really funny propaganda videos that they've made. It's pretty cute.
Awesome. Little Bees, is that L-I-T-T-L-E space B apostrophe S, or what is that?
Yeah, bees like the insect. Little
Bees.
Yes. Okay. Buzz, etc. So if we have any recorded questions.
That's good. Here we go.
Hey, this is Austin Knight up in Redmond, Washington. And I was just wondering what you guys' recommendations for a good RPG are. I don't like JRPGs, and I've played Oblivion to death, Mass Effect, Morrowind, The Witcher, Gothic 2, a little bit of Gothic 3, Neverwinter Nights, Titan Quest, pretty much anything I could get my hands on. I was wondering if there's anything I may have overlooked. Doesn't matter how old it is, I'll take a look at it. Thanks. Keep up the great work on the podcast. Bye.
That guy's intense.
Well, for one thing, the Witcher Enhanced Edition is about to come out. We've actually got our copy already. I think Deslock is going to be doing a column on it for next month. But I just checked the website. It doesn't look like it's quite out yet, but it will be soon. And so if you've got The Witcher, you can just download that, and it's supposed to fix a lot of the problems. I'm not exactly sure what it fixes, but I, for one, have been waiting to actually play that game until the Enhanced Edition comes out, because it's like, why would I play the imperfect version when I know the Enhanced version is coming? Other RPGs to play. You can always go back and try Fallout again, to get ready. Fallout 1 and 2, you'll be able to get off. I think you can get them on GameTap right now, right?
And good old games that... Oh, wait,
it's not live yet. It's still in beta.
Yeah, that's right, yeah.
Yeah, but until good old games goes live, you can get those off of GameTap on a temporary basis.
The reason I thought of good old games is because you can actually buy the game and own it and all that, so that's pretty cool.
Yeah, that's definitely the preferable way to do it. It's like $5 or $10 off of GG.
Yeah, I think it'll be like $6, I think. Yeah.
And I guess Logan would probably recommend Ultima, some version of that series.
Yeah.
Did he say he had played KOTOR?
I don't think he did.
Yeah, if you missed KOTOR, definitely play KOTOR.
Would we recommend the first one or the second one?
Probably first one.
First, yeah.
First one by far. The second one had some issues, especially in the end. The ending was unfinished, like completely unfinished. So you're kind of left hanging on a lot of things that were mentioned, and you don't know what happened to certain characters. There was a mod project a while back. I don't know if this was ever completed, but some people were trying to restore the original ending and make it like a complete game. What else? What's another RPG?
I've got a good one that seems like he will probably really like if he come based on the games he already listed, and then it's Vampire Masquerade.
Bloodlines.
And I know that you got to find the patch because the Troika, is that
Troika,
how
yeah.
They're no longer around, and so you got to find the patch to it if you buy the game, and make sure I forget the version number. It's like 1.2 or whatever, or else there's kind of a game-ending bug, and there's got some issues, but it's a really really cool game, a cool look at like vampire culture, you know, it's a really different look than you'll find in any other fiction, and it's probably my favorite version of like how vampires live among us, and it's really fun. You should check it out.
Yeah, it's based on a pen and paper game, right?
Yeah, it's White Wolf, and I know they have a lot of old vampire pen and paper stuff. It makes you kind of think like Underworld, but werewolves totally beat you. Yeah.
Well, that was like my problem with Underworld is like the werewolves were like way more powerful than the vampires. Like the vampires just seemed like humans with fangs, and they would just shoot everything, and the werewolves would just come in and kick their asses.
Well, that's how it is in the game, except 10 times. Like the werewolves are 10 times more powerful. That's kind of a spoiler.
That's like an off topic thing. But yeah. but Gothic 3 is another one you might try out if you haven't gotten to that one. I guess we gave that an 80%. I'm looking up reviews now. I guess if you like superheroes, I guess you could call Freedom Force an RPG. It's kind of an action RPG. Those are fantastic games.
And upcoming, obviously, there's Fallout 3, but Sacred 2, Fallen Angel, is coming up. That's sort of it's like a Diablo type of game, but it's very like open world, vast, 4-player, multiplayer.
It's more than 4-player on PC. I think it'll go up to 8 or 16, yeah. Well, yeah, on consoles, I think it's limited to 4, but maybe 8, yeah. But yeah, you can do a lot of multiplayer stuff in Sacred 2. We'll be reviewing that in a couple months.
Deus Ex?
That's a shooter RPG. Let's go ahead and recommend.
Still wonderful though, and I think it's on Game Pass.
ASX 1, yeah.
Yeah.
Yes, it is.
For free, even if you like ads, if you don't mind.
Yeah, that one's
is
that
it one's free ones? Awesome.
Or maybe was it, or is it still? I don't know.
It was free on Game Pass.
I think it might be. You can always go check. Yeah, I mean, right. It's certainly worth the time.
Yeah,
definitely.
That was a fantastic game.
Hello, PC Gamer Podcast. This is Killy Pants from Portland, Oregon. A.K.A. Silk Plant. That's my anagram. And I have a tech-related question for you today. So I've invested thousands of dollars in my elite gaming rig, and yet my 6-year-old Dell still fires up faster than it. What can I do to speed up the startup time of my gaming machine? Are there any utilities or programs or such that I could use? Thank you, and keep up the excellent work.
You know, I'll bet the utilities and programs are actually the problem rather than the solution here.
Yeah. I was just thinking that. The first thing I was going to say was stay away from the utilities. They will do nothing for you. There's lots and lots and lots of stuff you can do to speed up your boot time, but the utilities aren't going to help you to do them.
Unless it's a defrag utility.
Great. That's a good example. Yeah,
defragment your system partition, and that might give you a little boost if it's really really badly fragmented. But
he didn't say if he was using Vistra XP, which is pretty important. But I mean, there's you can do more to speed up things in XP. A couple things I can think of right at the top of my head are one thing that drives me crazy is the prefetch cache gets clogged in Windows XP. It never gets flushed out on its own. And what it does is it preloads all these programs that you've used, but it keeps everything. It tries to remember everything you've ever opened, and it just gets very gucky in there. Just go to go to your Windows directory and then look for the folder that says prefetch, select all, dump it all. Just drag it right into the trash. The next time you boot up your PC, it's going to take longer because Windows is kind of looking at programs that it needs to load initially, all its system files. But you'll notice that in subsequent boots after that, 1, 2, or 3, it'll get faster and faster. Frankly, what I do is I find it takes so long to go through all the startup items. That I just kind of reinstall Windows every 6 months automatically, just get to flush everything out. But I know that's not a practical solution for a lot of people. Another thing you can do is go to Start Menu, All Programs, I'm doing it right now, Accessories, System Tools, System Information. No, that's entirely wrong.
Yeah, I mean, one really basic way I've always been told is if you go to start, run, and type in msconfig.
That's what I was, yes, okay. Thank you. Yeah. Yeah. Did you? Oh, my God, I got shown up.
That's what I was going to suggest. Is go msconfig, go into the startup items, and just uncheck everything you don't need. Like a lot of like the iTunes helper stuff. You can run iTunes without iTunes helper. If you don't have an iPod, turn off the iPod search kind of crap they've got in there. And there are a bunch of applications that will just eat up a bunch of CPU cycles, and it takes up time when you boot up.
It's a pretty safe thing to do. You might find that it breaks some programs. If so, you can just go right back in and reactivate them. It doesn't delete anything from that list. So don't hesitate to uncheck a box in there. I've never seen a system broke because you unchecked something in the startup box. Never.
Right. And you can just recheck it and it's back.
Yeah, I've seen applications break, but no big deal. You just go right back in, and they'll tell you. They'll be like, oh, Norton antivirus couldn't load, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, although, like, that's another thing. And, antivirus software slows down your computer a lot. And, like, some of them are big and bulky. If you trust yourself to not open a bunch of strangers' attachments in email and spam and stuff, you can probably get away with turning that off and just run a regular sweep every so often just to keep yourself tidy. But running,
you haven't. I'm sorry. No.
Running Norton in the background all the time is gonna, and I got startup, that takes some time.
If you haven't reinstalled in 6 years, though, definitely give it a new coat of XP there, because I guarantee you you'll be delighted how much faster it is. There is one thing I can think of in Vista. Vista's pretty well optimized for its boot time, so there's not a whole lot you can do in there. But I do notice that it does that. It waits for like 30 seconds when you start up for some sort of boot menu for operating systems, and it doesn't always display it depending on where you got your computer from. But if you go into the and then right click on computer, select properties, and then go into the advanced system settings tab. And then the advanced tab from that, start and recovery, and then click on settings. I know it's very complicated. And then it says time to display operating systems list. And then you can make it like 5 seconds instead of 30.
Isn't that only a problem, though, if you've got more than one operating system?
Does it only pause if you have multiple? Oh, okay.
Yeah, because if you only got one OS installed, it's going to default to that. Yeah, on our systems here, and I guess Logan at home, they got XP and Vista dual booting. So if you have it set that way by default, it's going to sit there for 30 seconds, asking you which OS you want to boot.
This would be great to hear from listeners, like what their favorite tips for speeding up the boot time, because people love to tweak all the time.
You know what I increasingly do, and I know that this isn't very eco-friendly, but I think more and more people do this. I just leave my PC on overnight. when I wake up in the morning, I come into my office and my PC's it's all ready to go. And I know people. I try not to do this. Always at the weekend I'll shut it down, and I'll shut it down whenever I need to reboot or install something that requires a reboot. But I know from talking to people, some people online had a discussion about this recently, and people just will leave their PC on for days and weeks at a time. And I don't know if that's good for your PC, but that's one way that people get around the slow boot.
I haven't shut mine down in months.
Yeah, I mean I increasingly use the standby or hibernate functions.
Which are great.
It comes back pretty fast from those,
and they finally work in Vista.
Yeah,
that's one great thing about Vista is they do work now. I don't turn my PC off. It's always doing something generally. It does go into low power mode if it's not doing anything. I will turn it off if I leave the house for more than 7 days, something like that. It's always ready to go.
But the thing is that Logan enjoys destroying the planet. So if you're not like, if you don't like,
stomp. Stomp, stomp.
If you don't get like sexual arousal and gratification from causing the planet to crumble and become uninhabitable, then you might not want to follow Logan's.
If you want to get all technical and electrical and generical, then actually turning your PC on and off is harder on your PC than leaving it on, because it's that initial surge of electricity that really stresses components out, and the fact that they heat up after having cooled down, and all that expansion and contraction is pretty stressful as well. But that's such a minor thing. It's no reason to decide to leave your PC on or to turn it off. It's a very minor consideration.
Well, very good insight all around, guys. I won't call Captain Planet on anybody. But how about we do some playlists? What y'all been playing?
Logan.
You first. You totally first.
Me first. What have I been playing? I've been playing more Colonization. I've been playing some Stalker. Still having trouble getting into Stalker. And that's another one where you walk around eating bread and drinking vodka to restore your health
right.
and eliminate radiation. Yeah, I like the radioactive things in Stalker are kind of annoying me because it's like you're walking along and all of a sudden hot spot, you know.
You gotta throw your bolts out.
Yeah, but it's kind of annoying though. I just like to be able to see where I can't go. And what else have I played? I've been playing a little bit of the Red Alert 3 beta. And yeah, that's about it for me.
I've been back in Crisis. Because Warhead's coming up. This is run number 3, and I have to say the first half of the game never gets old.
What difficulty level are you on?
This time I'm just on
Delta.
Normal.
Delta.
Delta is way too hard for me. Way too hard.
It's fun though. It's
hard.
Yeah, but you prairie dog and poof, right in the forehead. Then right. You know, mm-hmm. Get up, prairie dog, poof, right in the forehead. But it's just. I love it. Even though I spend a lot of time cloaked, but what are you going to do? I don't want to mess up my nice suit.
Right.
Indeed. All right. How about you, Gary?
Same old. Some Team Fortress 2, as I said, been playing with the heavy stuff. And the other thing we didn't talk about actually in the update is the new arena mode, mm-hmm. which is Norm and myself and Will. Jumped on the other night and played some of that. I think it's going to be the new favorite mode among the hardcore. It's for 9 players. Actually, I think there are several modes. The one that we played was for 9 players, and it's 3 teams of 3. And you can have 2 teams in at once with 1 team sitting out. And basically, mm-hmm. the winning team stays on, the losing team has to switch out, and the other team comes in. And it's a pretty standard team deathmatch with the additional wrinkle of a capture point. That appears about a minute into the map, where you can win the game either by killing the other 3 players or by capturing the single point. So there's a little bit of a wrinkle in there, but it's very, very fast, very quick turnover of matches. You know, matches tend to last only a couple of minutes, and then they swap the teams out, and the objective is to win 5 matches in a row. And when somebody does that, they scramble all the teams and mix everyone up to randomize the players, and you start over. It's a pretty interesting mode.
Yeah, very cool. I think they also restrict health packs in that. Is that correct?
Yeah, very, very little health available, and no water either. So pyros are a lot more effective, because once you're burning. There's almost no way to prevent that unless you've got a medic around.
Very good. All right. Andy, how about yourself?
I played a little bit of Crisis as well before I left to New York, and then just a little bit of Audio Surf and Peggle on my laptop.
Peggle Knights is coming.
Oh, yeah.
It's just around the corner.
I have no idea how I beat the 750,000 in one turn challenge, because I can't redo it.
That was a boast. Who doesn't think that was a boast right now?
It was disguised as one.
Yeah.
It's worthy. It's worthy. It's good.
It is worthy.
And for myself, I've been playing Team Fortress 2 like everybody, I guess. Also, this little gem called Code of Honor 2 Conspiracy Island, which I'm reviewing. Looking forward to making references to Fantasy Island, the TV show, and that.
So my favorite part about Conspiracy Island is when I handed you that box for the review, I noticed on the back, or I guess maybe it was in some of the material they sent along with it, it claimed it was using the next generation engine that powered Fear. It's like, at what point? I know they called it next gen at the time, but at what point does next gen become last gen, or the gen before last, for that matter? Because I mean, if you go into Fear now and look at it, and admittedly, when we first saw Fear, it looked amazing. It was mind-boggling how good that looked. But when you go back now and look at it, not so hot. So I don't know if you can call that next gen anymore.
Yeah, I mean, when I was, it's absolutely true. When I was playing, you can recognize some of the individual animations, like the enemies jumping over bars and the way they hit the ground, the ragdoll and stuff. It's pretty, not identical, but it's like a cousin almost. but yeah, otherwise, I'm actually looking forward to firing up this weekend before I have some more stuff to do. One of my personal classic favorites, Mech Commander by FOSS Interactive, came out in like 1998 or so. It's like an isometric strategy game, totally cool with mechs.
98? Is it that old? I guess there was a Mech Commander too. Okay, that's what I'm thinking of.
Yeah, there was. There was, yeah. Yeah, I'm crazy about it. All right, well, we're nearing the bottom of today's podcast, Snowy Slope, and just like the Windows 3.1 classic Ski Free, we're likely to be gobbled up by an impossibly fast, abominable snowman if we continue any further.
Oh my God, you just like hit upon everything I love in my life.
No, it was awesome.
Ski Free, actual snow, abominable
totally
snowmans.
Oh, what a bummer about Bigfoot, huh? I was kind of hoping that, you know.
That did turn out to be a hoax. Huh? Who saw that coming?
A monkey suit, man.
A monkey suit? Really?
Yeah, that was it. It was a monkey suit.
I was expecting something a little bit more elaborate than that.
Well, what I think might have happened, although this is, who knows, but I think that the guys who found it might actually have been fooled into thinking that they had found, because they kept it frozen in a block.
Wait,
and so they may actually have believed that they had something. So because they were talking all kinds of trash. Everybody who doesn't believe us is going to be eating their words, blah, 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 blah.
So they're really, really stupid? Is that...
Yeah, which is, I mean, talk about a global humiliation.
Right. I mean, I would have at least hoped for like a monkey suit that was like stuffed with roadkill.
Yeah. No, it was like, you know, because they burned the fur and it melted and hair doesn't do that. And they're like, oh,
right.
Yeah.
Maybe that's plastic.
Yeah.
Well,
very...
We will continue to
keep
the
faith.
Well,
who's to say Bigfoot isn't made out of plastic?
You know what? Gary has a point. There is still hope.
That is an excellent point. It could be an oil-based life form.
Yes.
Oh, my goodness. Yes. So, well, while we ponder the idea of a plastic Yeti, in the weekly absence of our chorus of computer experts, we'd welcome your vocal contributions for our upcoming episodes of the podcast. Send your questions to us in MP3 format to pcgamerpodcast@gmail.com. If you like your telephone a lot, you can just call us toll-free at 877-404-1337, extension 724, and record your question over the phone and keep it relatively brief and sans profanity if you could.
We should add to that, just a reminder, we're going to have Shavat Yearly interviewing next week. We're going to be interviewing him, I should say. So if you want to contribute some questions to that, feel free to send those questions to that same email address, and we'll ask him.
Yes. Direct crisis answering your questions. It can happen. All you have to do is pick up that phone.
And we'd also invite you to check out our upcoming triplet of September LAN events next month called Showdown LAN, held in Worcester, Massachusetts from September 5th through the 7th, then in San Mateo, California, September 19th through the 21st, and in Peoria, Illinois from September 26th through the 28th. Pre-registration is still available as long as you're registering before the event itself for the low, low price of $40. Visit showdownland.com for more information. You can also join our League of Extraordinary Publications by subscribing to PC Gamer Magazine. Just head on over to
gamesradar.com/PC and click the subscribe tab on the left.
On behalf of the PC Gamer podcast crew, this is Evan Lottie saying thanks for listening, and we're looking forward to circling our Sonic wagons again next week.
Later, Gators.
PCGamer.com/
I'm waiting.
No,
but that was awesome. League of Extraordinary Publications. Oh, my God. I gave him a bad... Yeah. No, that was my fault.
I'm waiting to be impressed.
Yeah, I just I copied it from your notes.
I brought you down.
Just pick up from head on over to and just substitute with gamesradar.com/PC and click the subscribe tab on the left.
Can I just put in Dan's voice there? Head on over to gamesradar.com/PC. Yeah.
If you'd like. all right, I'll just do that.
Yeah, just heard that too. What was that?
Sorry, I have a bad cough.
No, that wasn't it. We heard a buzz.
Did you mute your microphone to cough?
Yeah, I did. I should have used the.
It makes that. It makes that.
Try that again.
The microphone mute.
The mute. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. Don't do that.
Yeah. Usually I use the button, but I couldn't reach the time.
All right.
Sorry.
It's cool.
It's okay. Continuing on.
Sandwich. Me and my sandwich.
I'm your sandwich, saving heavy slides if they take too much damage. Scout eating me, but I'm gonna make him fat. Would you like some french fries with that? Shove me in your face, we're talking cramage. I'm your sandwich, but you can call me ham and cheese. The only way you'll eat me is if you're going heavy. You're like, come on, sandwich, just a bite, please. I'm starving over here, I'm down on my knees. Pumpernickel rye, any bread you please. Toasted dryer with a mustard squeeze. Provolone Swiss, I'm filled with cheese. You wish you had another one just like me. I'm your sandwich.
Nom, 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 nom. Ah, so feeling. I am full of sandwich, and I am coming for you.
I'm your sandwich. Maybe you think I'm not much of an advantage. Fat, commie bastard, chewing mouth open. What were the dudes at Valve smoking? Forums filling up with rantage. Stop crying about me when I give you help. For saving the chainsaw for somebody else. At least I'm delicious, everyone's got wishes. Even a sandwich like myself. If you lift my lid, here is what you'll see. I'll get a little mayonnaise spread. Lettuce, tomato, piled high with meat, kid. Man, don't forget the cheese with an olive and a toothpick for your teeth. I'm your sandwich.
Don't run. What was that sandwich? Kill them all? Good idea.
I'm your sandwich. Soviet built, you could call me a manwich. People's party, party, people's bread. Comrades, I prefer it on Team Red. Capitalist pigs should be banished. I'm your sandwich. You think that I am useless? Yeah, I heard you said it. You miss your puny shotgun, man, don't you get it? Someone's getting really sick of healing your ass. It's called a medic. So you've lost a lot of blood, then eat me, bitch. Shovel me down like you was digging a ditch. Ham and cheese, Reuben, submarine too. Any way you slice it, I'm good for you. And I'm the sandwich.
That was delicious.